Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Well, now we know what the state plans for passenger rail in Ohio. The plan would connect Ohio's three largest cities, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus, and Dayton. The service could be up and running in 2 years. A new study by Amtrak says that the trains would attract 478,000 riders per year. Amtrak says that Ohio is ready for rail service and it's not a flash in the pan anymore. But the study also says that the service would cost the state roughly $17 million a year in subsidies and bring in just $12 million a year in fares. It would cost $517 million for tracks and trains. Most of that is expected to come from federal stimulus money and travel time from Cleveland to Cincinnati, 6.5 hours. Top speed, 79 miles per hour. Average speed, 39 miles per hour. It's not exactly Thomas the Tank Engine, but it sure isn't high-speed rail. Mark Kilmer of the Buckeye Institute for Public Policy Solutions says the costs outweigh the benefits. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jack Shaner of the Ohio Environmental Council says that trains are good for the economy and good for the environment. Welcome, Jack.
Good morning, Ann.
Mark, let's start with you. In a blog on August 20, you said that trains just aren't practical, that the travel times from such studies don't include the time to wait in line to buy tickets, time to travel from your home to the station, the time to reach your ultimate destination after you arrive, and the time waiting for trains to arrive and depart. So even if there were no public funding required, because I know that bothers you, you think train travel just doesn't make sense at all in the modern lifestyle?
No, I really have nothing against train travel in general. I think my main problem is the subsidies for it. I think that if people want to put up with the inconveniences of train travel, that they should be able to do that as long as they don't make anyone else pay for their decision. I have lived in areas where I have taken Amtrak a lot, and for me at that time, the inconveniences of Amtrak the conveniences outweighed the inconveniences, but that is a choice that I made, and I don't think that other people should have to subsidize that choice for me.
What do you say to that, Jack?
Well, the experience of there are 14 other states that have gone before Ohio and have invested with their own state treasury and developing their own state-funded passenger rail systems that are operated by Amtrak. And so we can look to our neighbors, that great state up north, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Illinois, our Big Ten rivals, are actually adding more trains. They believe that it is convenient. And they've asked themselves three questions. Is this good for the economy? Is this good for the environment? And is this good for the community, the public? And they've decided overwhelmingly yes, and that's what other states are finding as well.
Jack, you brought up economic development. It's hoped for. It's always hoped for, but it's never a guarantee. What is the strongest argument for how jobs would be created with the proposed medium-speed passenger rail?
You know, other states have had to first start out with the conventional speed, 79 miles an hour, and then it's on the two coasts where you see true high-speed rail. We've been whistle-stopping Ohio this week. I'm down in Cincinnati. We were just in front of the Chamber of Commerce this morning with a developer, private commercial real estate developer from the state of Maine. And he has a $100 million project being invested around a new passenger train station in the small coastal town of Saco, Maine, about 50,000 population. And they are projecting throughout Maine some $7 billion, that's billion with a B, in additional construction investments, 18,000 new jobs, $2.5 billion in additional consumer purchasing power over the next 20, 30 years because of their rail line. So developers, the business community, when you have a fixed asset like a train station, if it's done right and if it's run well, that will attract commercial investment. So if you build it, that commercial investment can come. We've seen it happen in other states. It certainly can happen in Ohio, where 6 million people live within 15 miles of this rail corridor, one of the, if not the most populated corridors in the United States that is currently not served by intercity passenger rail.
Mark, what do you say to that?
Well, I say that those projections are fairly unrealistic. I've read the Maine study, and they were done by a pro-rail group that, they're essentially made up. There is no basis in fact for those 30-year projections. And what economists that aren't connected with consulting firms or groups pushing for rail have found is that While there is economic development around train stations and around areas that have rail, that economic development is not created. It's merely redistributed. It's economic development that would have occurred in the area anyway, but these businessmen or entrepreneurs instead choose the location based on the train station. So it's not as if the economic development is new in that area or would have been created by the train station. It's merely a different location than what it would have been before. And so the idea that all of these new businesses and things will be created because of this 3C plan or other rail plans is not really based in fact. And those economic development forecasts also don't take into account the deadweight economic loss that the taxes and the subsidies and all those things will impose upon society. So rail really does not produce any economic growth.
Hey, Mark, as far as the economic projections go, we depend on economic projections every day. So economics in and of itself is an uncertain and a science. But to flat out say that 30 years out, it doesn't matter, you can't make those kind of projections, we depend on those kind of things all the time. We have to have some kind of studies look forward. But your point about them being by pro-train groups is well taken.
I think any economic projections over a 30-year period are kind of inherently uncertain, you know, even if they're put out by the best of people. I mean,
right.
No one can see that far in the future. And so, you know, I'm kind of skeptical of any economic projections from that time, you know, over that time period. But, you know, there have been a series of articles recently in the New York Times, for instance, by a Harvard economist that has looked at, you know, high-speed rail, which has some of the same characteristics of passenger rail. And basically, you know, that economist, what he published was that while he is a big fan of trains, that, you know, the economic development aspects of rail travel are highly, highly oversold by advocates.
Jack, why should the rest of the taxpayers pay for a relative few, a half million out of 8 million that will ride the trains at below market rates? What's in it for those who don't ride the trains?
You bet it. This is a service. You look at a library, public transit, bike path. You may say, we could really live without those. Those aren't really essential services. It's nice we have a library. It's nice to have public transit. It's nice to have these rail trail bike paths. But do we really need to have those? You walk into any city hall, any chamber of commerce, you ask them, what is the value of a strong transit system or library or bike paths? It adds to that quality of life, and it does help spur commerce. I think it'd be a rude awakening to the investors, the private investors up there in that development in Maine and other investments around rail stations to learn that, hey, these jobs, this development, this really isn't going to – it's not really going to happen. That's not what private investors believe. That's not what our own chambers of commerce here in Ohio, the chambers of commerce in Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, Cincinnati have all endorsed, are all eager for this 3C system to get up and running. You know, these are the businessmen and women with the sharp pencils, and they believe that, in fact, it does make sense and that Ohio should go forward.
Yeah, Mark, people are willing to put their money where their mouth is on this. Of course, outside of the state subsidy, what do you say to that, that people are willing to invest?
Well, I would say specifically to his point, I agree that some businessmen do like this. Businessmen always love subsidies. I am no apologist for the Chamber of Commerce or for businessmen here. If the government is going to throw money at them directly or indirectly and subsidize their business, of course they're going to jump all over this. And so, that argument is not so compelling to me. It's really looking out for the taxpayers of the state. The taxpayers should not be subsidizing, businessmen. The taxpayers should not be subsidizing this rail that will mainly go for young professionals, as we see in other areas. If businessmen want to make a profit in the state of Ohio, they should not rely upon the taxpayers to subsidize that profit.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you would like to join the conversation about the 3C rail plan for Ohio, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mark, Jack and others point out the environmental impact of trains. The Environmental Magazine, they quoted a U.S. Department of Energy report, which I did not double check. But it said that Amtrak is 17% more efficient than domestic airline travel and 21% more efficient than auto travel on a per-passenger mile basis. A lot of people are thinking about how to green things up. It's becoming a national, kind of a national discussion, and certainly is entering into our national public policy. How do you feel about it that way?
Well, I do think there are some environmental benefits for trains. The magnitude of those benefits, though, are really dependent upon how many people ride the trains. If there are a very large number of people who ride the trains and it does remove some cars from the road, then there are environmental benefits. However, if the trains operate at their general low capacity, the environmental benefits are much less. These trains have to be powered by either diesel, which is polluting, or by electric power, which in Ohio is 90% or so generated from coal. And so, they have to get energy from somewhere. And they are a more energy efficient mode of transportation. But to really get the environmental benefits that are talked about, you have to have very high ridership on the trains.
Jack, what do you say that? Trains do use diesel fuel. What's the difference in terms of that carbon footprint?
Yeah, good question. This is from the statistics you're quoting, Ann, that newspaper article. That's from the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And indeed, it's showing that passenger rail on a per-mile passenger basis is more energy efficient than either air travel or automobile. Incidentally, for airline travel, those emissions are up in the upper atmosphere. There are some scientists believe that that has an even stronger, more potent, twice the greenhouse gas effect when your carbon emissions are, and other greenhouse gas emissions are up in upper atmosphere. Michigan is attracting about 250,000 riders a year, Wisconsin 500,000, and Illinois, that weak sister in the Big Ten, is besting us all at 1.5 million riders a year. The Amtrak study is projecting more than even the state officials thought, just under 500,000 riders in a year. That's pretty remarkable for a state that hasn't had intercity passenger rail. The train has left the 3C station the 1970s. We haven't had service in Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati. So to go from 0 to 60, from go to no passengers to suddenly a jolt here of projecting almost 500,000, and then I think it's 600,000 estimated by 2014 with the same number of stops, the same number of stations, I think speaks a lot. And again, 6 million people along this corridor, I think it's a can't miss here. And that's what the Amtrak study is projecting. And Amtrak typically has pretty conservative estimates of ridership if you talk to transportation officials.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am speaking with Jack Shaner of the Ohio Environmental Council and Mark Kilmer of the Buckeye Institute for Public Policy Solutions. We're talking about rail travel, passenger rail travel in the state of Ohio. If you would like to join the conversation, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to take a break right now. This is WOSU NPR News.
Joe Wilson tells the president he's sorry, but not the House, and receives a reprimand. The president blasts Kanye. It's off the record, but right there on Twitter. The Veep visits Baghdad, and then there's this matter of health care. Maybe a bill by week's end. I'm Neil Conan, political junkie Ken Rudin, and a new trivia question. Join us next time on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is coming up today at 2 here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Emma Fett in for Amy Jurevich this week. Currently it's 68 degrees and partly cloudy. Partly sunny today in Columbus with a high near 77.
Support for WOSU comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment consultants, helping clients achieve financial independence through professional planning at sherringtongroup.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you would like to join us in this conversation about passenger rail in the state of Ohio, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mark, proponents say that a rail corridor would link Ohio with the rest of the nation's rail lines, that ridership wouldn't just involve Ohio residents, but also people who travel through Ohio. I suppose it's maybe the same sort of argument that they make for bringing in gambling and, you know, lowering, you know, the taxes on cigarettes and those kind of things, as people can just go across the line and spend their money in another state. Doesn't it make some economic sense to you if the other states around us are building these rail lines and beefing things up? Do we want to be left out of something like that?
Well, to me, it's exactly the opposite conclusion. If these other states are wasting their taxpayers' money on these rail lines, which, you know, require, you know, millions of dollars in subsidies every year, and require all these high upfront capital costs, Ohio would be much better off if, especially in light of its current budget problems, if it did not waste all of its money on a system which is going to obligate it to spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars every year once it's put in place to support it. If these other states want to waste their taxpayers' money on that, then that's their poor decision. But Ohio taxpayers would be much better off if Ohio didn't do that.
What about the state's opportunity to avail itself of the stimulus money for this project?
Well, the stimulus money is, you know, attractive out there, but it isn't free money. The stimulus money, like a lot of the other stimulus money, essentially, if Ohio takes it, that they are putting themselves in a position to have an obligation to spend money in the future that they may not have. That, yes, you know, part of the capital cost may be paid for, but once this is in place, Ohio taxpayers are going to be obligated to, you know, pay year after year tens of millions of dollars to operate this passenger rail system.
Yeah, and Jack, maybe I've been covering public policy for too long, but no matter what the estimate is, it's always higher. So what about that? That it looks like there's going to be enough stimulus money to support this initial outlay of $500 million or $478 million, but what about when we go over budget?
Yeah, the stimulus is available incidentally at 0% match here initially by the state. That is, there's $8 billion on the table in Washington, D.C. There's 40 other states that are making application, indicating over $100 million. Over $100 billion have already been asked for in pre-applications. We'll know at the October 2nd deadline when Ohio and those states make their final applications. But already about $100 billion being requested of a pool of only $8 billion on the table. Now, yes, Ohio would then have to continue that system, keep it going here, but no transportation system is free. They all require some support. When you stick that nozzle in your gas tank, your car, you're paying about 50 cents a gallon in state and federal taxes for that. Now, you may say, well, but that's fair. That's the user. If you drive those highways, you're going to pay, and so altogether appropriate. But what about this train? Well, again, the train is like liken it to a library. I liken it to a bike path. I liken it to many other systems that we all pay for, and yet it makes our community more vibrant. It makes us a better place to live, a more fun place to live, a better quality of life. And so other communities, other states have found that it is worth continuing, it's worth making the investments. And Ohioans, incidentally, appear to want this. You know, we haven't had passenger trains. It's a pretty foreign experience unless you're willing to get up currently and get on a train in the middle of the night up in Cleveland, Toledo, Sandusky, or down in Cincinnati. And yet a poll back in March of this year by Quinnipiac University showed 64% of Ohioans favorable to the 3C. Now, we need a longer debate here. This is altogether appropriate, but pretty impressive right out of the gates with not having seen a passenger train in the daylight a long, long time in Ohio, that 64% of Ohioans want this. So, you know, I think this is a growing trend across the nation. Ohio, pretty demographically average. Columbus, kind of a test market here. People want this, and I think the more they learn about this, the more they're going to like what they hear.
If you'd like to join the conversation about 3C passenger rail in Ohio, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's take a call right now from John. You want to know about eminent domain issues. John.
Yes, just a quick question for either guest. Do you foresee any eminent domain issues that might arise from a project such as this?
This is Jack. That's a good question. I have not had opportunity to review line by line the entire Amtrak draft report. But my guess would be no. Certainly the rail lines, it's envisioned to be using existing freight lines, mostly Norfolk Southern and CSX transportation. There's a little bit of smaller freight lines that own a little bit of the lines, but mostly the big two. So this would run on these existing lines, and incidentally, that is one side benefit. These federal dollars Ohio is applying for would largely be used to improve existing tracks, improve signals, add passing lanes. This is necessary to be able to get up to that 79-mile-an-hour speed, but also will pay side benefits for our freight industry and will help move freight using less energy.
Well, freight, you bring that up, Jack, freight. The freight industry is concerned about this. The trucking industry is very concerned about the impact on their business.
Yes, that's correct. Now, the freight railroads are in favor of this. They like those improvements they see. Yes, there's some concern that by trucking that, this is going to improve our competitor. Those freight lines will now possibly have a competitive advantage because they'll have better tracks and whatnot. We make all kinds of investments all over this nation. Our government, our leaders, our population has determined this is appropriate role for government to do. So we've got a fine interstate highway system. Maybe we need a better steel interstate system, our rail lines.
Mark, what do you think about that? What do you think about the concerns by not only the trucking industry, but also the contracting industry is concerned about this? Why would they be concerned? Why can't we just shift our, interests from the highways to the rails?
I have not really read too much about the concern of other industries about this. I mean, there is some concern about the subsidies for certain industries, and that's always going to be a problem when you have the government, as in this case, investing heavily in certain things. But the talk about subsidies, the talk about whether or not other modes of transportation are subsidized is an important one. And if we really want to talk about those subsidies, I think that, if we look at how much, road, transportation is subsidized, not through user fees like the gas tax, but through general funds, it's about half a penny per passenger mile driven. Airline travel is about a tenth of a penny per passenger mile. And railroads is about 22 cents per passenger mile, and passenger rail, I should say. And so, the whole idea that we subsidize other forms of transportation and so we should subsidize passenger rail, I'll concede that point. But, if Jack will concede that passenger rail only gets subsidized as much as, say, road travel, then I think we could both come to an agreement and there'd be no more political debate about
and
this.
And I would go out of business. Let's take some let's take some calls from listeners. It's 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are lit up like a Christmas tree. Patty, you're on the air.
I just want to say I am a senior citizen, and just because I'm a senior citizen doesn't mean I'm dead yet. I still see
I hear you.
Galleries, and I live in senior housing, and I get tired driving long distances just to go have some fun someplace else. And Columbus is getting so exciting downtown. I go down frequently and find a new place to eat, Dirty Harry's.
So you're for the trans?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I don't care, if we have to support bike rails. It's a shame that people can't get from here to there. I saw a cartoon in the paper one time that showed a big car in the center of the state represented Columbus. Train tracks all the way around. And not one connection.
Okay. All right, Patty, we're going to move on because we've got lots of callers, and I think people are very interested in this. Marie, are you on the, you're on the air.
There has been talk about obliging people to pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera. How about the obligation of requiring all of us to be drivers? There has been this obligation for so many years that if you don't have a car and can't drive the car, you really are limited in where you can get to. Think about having trains come to Columbus for those wonderful games for people from Cleveland and Cincinnati and so forth that would keep a lot of cars off the road. that would help to pay for those trains. When I was in college 1,000 years ago, we had a special car put on the back of a train when we were going from Cleveland to Philadelphia for a convention. Those advantages I would like to see come back.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. We have some emails, too. One from Jim. He's both a libertarian and a fan of train travel. I'd like to see more opportunities for train travel in Ohio and the Midwest. However, rather than subsidize trains, what do your guests think of the idea of ending subsidies for car and truck travel in the form of more toll roads? I guess the subsidies being that the toll roads pay for... I'm not quite sure what he means by that, but maybe Mark or you or Jack know.
Well, I mean, their road car travel really isn't subsidized that much.
Right.
I mean, the gas tax goes to pay for the roads. I mean, there is a small subsidy, like I mentioned, about half a cent per passenger mile driven. That, you know, some local governments use property taxes to build roads and things like that. But on the whole, road travel pays for itself. Yeah, I mean, you know, if the gas tax wants, you know, if you want to lower the gas tax and put in more toll roads, I mean, I think that's a good idea. I mean, I generally believe more in user fees than in taxes, but the gas tax is about as close to a user fee as you can get with the tax.
How about you, Jack? What do you think?
Let's put this in perspective. The estimating, the Amtrak study is estimating the state would need about a $17 million in operating support subsidy every year. That is approximately, or a little less than 0.5% of ODOT's annual $3.8 billion budget. Now, ODOT is quick to indicate publicly that they do not intend to use the state fuel tax. They intend to use other revenue sources. But just put this perspective, you know, we're talking about less than 0.5% what we spend on highways every year. So this looks like a pretty good investment. I like some of the comments. One of your callers, Marie, talked about riding the train. You know, as our baby boomer, and yes, I think that's probably all three of us on this phone here. as we age.
I don't know who you're talking about,
Jack. When we were in high school, I tell you, I loved getting that big car and drive. As I get more mature, shall we say, I enjoy that a little bit less. And like Marie and some of your other listeners, I think Ohioans are going to jump all over this chance to go to Cleveland, go to Cincinnati, go to Dayton, take in theater, go to a museum, go to a ball game, and not have to fight that traffic and enjoy the experience of looking for a parking spot, all the wonders that go, all the downside of driving.
Mark, you know, you were mentioning earlier that you think a lot of this has to do with trying to attract young professionals. It is a problem in the state of Ohio. We have a big, what they call, brain drain.
Yeah.
What about that? I mean, is it worth an investment if it brings back more people?
Well, I don't think trains will bring people to Ohio.
Okay.
I mean, I doubt that there are people that live in, you know, Florida that say that they want to go live in Ohio, you know, because they have a passenger rail system. I mean, I don't think that's how people think. I mean, I think that...
Well, it's part of a fabric of...
Well, it may play into the decision, but, mm-hmm. but I really doubt that's kind of the tipping point of most people. I do think that the majority of people that ride these trains will be professionals that already are in, you know, Columbus and Cleveland that need to go up between meetings and things like that. I mean, that's what you generally see in, you know, like the Washington, D.C. corridor. I mean, I used to live in Washington, D.C. and would go to New York and Wilmington, Delaware and things like that on Amtrak for business. And you often saw, you know, very young, affluent people in there on the train. And, you know, those people are the ones who will be using it. And, you know, I really don't know if it's, you know, a good priority for, you know, the state's taxpayers to be subsidizing the travel of the affluent.
Jack,
you know,
I've
ridden Amtrak a little bit. Yes, I've gotten up in the dark of night and gotten on a train at Toledo. I've gone over to Chicago and back, and from Cincinnati over to Washington, D.C. and back. And I've been impressed the wide variety of travelers. Absolutely, as Mark says, you do see a number of young professionals, but you'll see senior citizens, you'll see folks of limited income, you'll see some more fluent folks. It's a really interesting demographic, especially when you're over in northern Indiana between Chicago and Toledo, Sandusky, Cleveland. You'll see in Elkhart, a number of Amish get on and off there. It's just an interesting little snapshot of America when you get out and ride that train.
We have an email from Ed. He says, I'm all for the 3C train, but this may not work if these things are not considered carefully. The speed of the train, he said, it must be fast to attract business passengers. You should charge different prices for different times. and also make at least one train nonstop between the big cities. Does anybody know what a nonstop is?
Eventually that train's got to stop somewhere. Let's take up the speed. And no question that, we're not talking a high-speed rail here. This is a 79 mile an hour. That's its max. That is not its average speed that we're looking at. And you may say, well, I can get in that car. I can drive up to Cleveland, drive down to Cincinnati. And I just went online this morning. We haven't talked about ticket price. We can look. A nice thing about being last, next to last Ohio, we can look to other states. If you were in that great state up north and you are traveling Detroit to Kalamazoo, that's about the same distance as Columbus to Cleveland, $24 one way, 3 hours. Or if you want to look at Columbus to Cincinnati, about the same distance of Detroit to Ann Arbor. Yes, I said Ann Arbor. Sorry. That's about a $12 ticket, about 1 hour. Now, you may say, I can drive that back, a tank of gas. I can get down there faster and cost me less on that tank of gas. Well, let's look into that a little deeper. The business reimbursement rate for travel is more like 50 cents a mile. Now you're talking 78 cents, that trip up to Cleveland, or 58 bucks down to Cincinnati when you put in wear and tear, insurance, taxes, maintenance on your vehicle. And how about that time? Yeah, you can probably drive that faster, but you get to enjoy out there with some other knuckleheads on the road. Not everybody is equally safe driver. Probably one of your top risks for sudden death or injury is in that automobile. And it can be a great experience, or it can be get a little tiresome at times. Train, you can text on that phone, you can work that laptop, you can look out the window, you can have a meeting. All things I've done in a car. I haven't worked on the laptop
Shame
yet.
On you.
I haven't worked on the laptop yet, but it wasn't exactly safe. You can certainly do that on train. There's nice things you can do on train, much more big, comfortable seat than you'll ever get crammed in that automobile.
Mark, you talk about that issue of what you can actually do in that spare time. I want to get back to that in a few minutes. We need to take a break right now. You can call 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
WOSU News reports on stories from around the state and in your backyard.
The five state public pension systems will present new plans to the Ohio Retirement Study Council next week. Each system has endured significant losses in assets.
We foresee a shortfall that at some point we would not have the assets to pay member benefits.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU News team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Next hour, former Ohio State All-American quarterback Arch Leister talks about his iconic football career and the gambling addiction that cost him his self-respect, his family, and his freedom. Stay tuned for that conversation coming up in just about 20 minutes. Partly sunny today, high around 77, currently at 68 degrees, and partly cloudy. Overnight low around 53 with partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow should be much like today, mostly sunny with a high of 77. Friday should be sunny, high near 79, and the weekend should be sunny and mild.
Get more radio. The WOSU Fall Membership Drive begins soon, and you can help reduce the number of days. For every $20,000 we raise, we'll take one day off the drive. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree for details.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you would like to join the conversation about the proposed 3C rail corridor in Ohio, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jack, I'm wondering about the issue of the gas stations and fast food restaurants that operate along the expressways now. Will those die off like the businesses along the old two-lane highways after the expressway system was built? What about the economic impact in reverse?
I'm not quite sure. I think can you restate your question?
Well, as we pull people off the roads and into the trains, we lessen the traffic on the highways, on the expressways.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Less consumer purchases at the fast food places, at the convenience stores, at the gas pump.
Well, those highways aren't going to go away, and we certainly don't want them to go away. We need a really vibrant transportation system. We need to reinvest in all modes of transportation, both freight and passenger. You know, we were talking about passenger today, but a lot more mass, a lot more weight, a lot more energy is used moving goods and raw materials than is used to move passengers around, although it's considerable for passengers as well. So I don't think those are going to go away at all. But what can thrive more is the more mom and pops, is the smaller business that can accrue, as well as a small retail business and commercial business that can accrue around station stops. We were just in Springfield, Ohio yesterday. If you go online to the Springfield Sun newspaper, you'll see a front page story about this developer from Maine. Came in and made a presentation, and you'll see in their quotes from the Springfield Chamber of Commerce how they're excited, how they're cheerleading. Now, Springfield did not make the cut. It is not on this initial recommended list of stations from Amtrak. I believe that's a function of asking for what's the most direct, fastest route here between the three C's and the D, Dayton. But it's hoped that Springfield will be added in the future. We were in a meeting in Zanesville Chamber of Commerce yesterday morning, and there were people there from Hamilton, Ohio, people from Middletown. So it's interesting, the beauty contest that's going on where other towns are vying, want to come in. The Dayton suburb quickly of Riverside, right next to the Air Force Museum, they are very excited. They are wanting to get a train stop there one day in Riverside, and or maybe on weekend service, to be able to provide service to come in. This is why, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Columbus Clippers, and the Crew, the Blue Jackets, Cavaliers are all endorsing this. They see opportunities for a new segment of their customers to develop, to come to these communities. Why travel and tourism bureaus are excited about what we talked about. I agree with Mark. I don't see people from Florida flocking back to Ohio because of the train. I do see, though, more opportunity for interstate or intrastate travel here in Ohio, and for support those businesses around those station stops.
Mark, what do you think about the rest of our transportation system in Ohio? Do you think it will suffer if something like this is built?
No, I really don't think that the businesses along the highways and the interstates really have any fear of passenger rail. I mean, they know what, you know, independent economists know, that there just isn't going to be the ridership for these rails that will really take away any of their business. And so, I don't think they really have any fear of that whatsoever. And that's because, you know, to kind of go back to the how much time this consumes, you know, as someone who has taken passenger rail, I think, you know, if you look at exactly the mechanics that are involved with taking that, you'll see that a lot of people will not choose to do it because it is so inconvenient. Look at, like, the D.C. to New York area, which is heavily traveled. But if you live out in the Washington, D.C. suburb, to get to the, you know, to Union Station in Washington, D.C., you have to either drive or take a commuter rail or a metro into there. You have to buy your ticket and wait in line for the train. Then you have to spend the time on the train, which is about the same as driving between the two cities. And then if you're going anywhere in New York City besides right downtown, you have to take the subway out to the boroughs, or you have to take a commuter rail out to some of the outer suburbs, or you have to rent a car.
But Mark, you don't have to park.
Well, you
that's a big deal in New York City.
Well, true. In New York City, I mean, that's a very specific thing. Yeah, you don't have to park in New York City. But, you know, if you look at a place like, Cleveland to Columbus, if you unless you live right by the train station and you're going to right near the train station in your destination city, you're going to have to either drive downtown to get to the train station or take a cab or take a bus, then take the train, which takes longer than driving itself, from city center to city center. And then once you're at that destination, you're going to have to find some other way to get where you're going, like I said, unless your destination is within walking distance of where you are. And so if you're going from suburb to suburb, this will make absolutely no sense in terms of time or convenience to get from city to city.
Okay. You can call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's hear from Tom. You're on the line.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Great conversation this morning. And I'm glad that you brought up the one overlooked demographic, which I think will is the drunken sports fan. But no, seriously, the major sports teams in Ohio, when you look at the biggest revenues, are baseball, basketball, and football. We don't have in Columbus any of those except for a minor league baseball team, which is fine. But the thing is, we also have not only the largest population in Ohio in the greater Columbus area, but also the most affluent. We have the extra money to spend, but I'll be honest with you, finding parking in Cincinnati and Cleveland, depending on where you're going for a sports event, is a nightmare. And then it ends up, you know, the cost can be $20, $25, and then you've got to fight traffic getting out, and it's just such a pain. So a lot of us just don't go. We're just, you know, we'll watch it on TV. Whereas if there was a commuter rail system, time isn't necessarily something, we're not trying to get there in a hurry, but it's something that definitely, you know, every couple of weeks you can jump on the train, run down, catch a Reds game, or go up and catch an Indians game when they're in town. And, you know, that's going to be a big thing, not only for the sports teams in Ohio, but also for the Columbus residents. We really enjoy our sports. I mean, we're rabid sports fans here, and it's not just Buckeyes, you know. So I think that's where you're seeing, especially in Columbus, a lot of people are in support of this, is because we want to go to Cleveland, and we want to go to Cincinnati. But
we don't want to drive drunk.
It's not even driving drunk, necessarily. We don't want to have to fight the traffic and look for parking and fight the inevitable traffic jams in Cincinnati that are just horrible and daily, you know? So we don't want to do that.
All
we're like, you know, it's not worth it. So,
all righty. Well,
go rail.
Thanks for calling, Tom.
What
about that? What about this pleasure driving, this pleasure riding that may go on between the cities? Mark, what do you think?
Well, I mean, there certainly will be people that do that. I just don't think the state's taxpayers should subsidize, you know, 60% of the cost of their ticket to do it. If you want to go from Columbus to Cincinnati or to Cleveland to watch a game, you should be free to do that. But don't ask, you know, some struggling worker that's trying to support his family in Ohio's, you know, very, very precarious economy to pay more in taxes to, you know, so that you can enjoy the pleasure of having a couple beers at the ballpark.
You're listening to WOSU 820. Let's take an email from John. He says there is one huge advantage to driving these routes rather than taking a train. When you get there, you have a car. One solution would be easy rental cars, virtually a new service. I love the train idea, but this problem needs to be solved first. Jack, what about that short-term travel but from the stations to other ultimate destinations? That concerns a lot of people.
Yep, that's called the final mile. And just like as you, when you travel by air, you've got to drive to that airport, park that car, go in, get in line. Now something you don't have to enjoy on the train is the wonderful experience of taking your shoes off and getting scanned and all that. And once you arrive by that plane, you've got to what? Rent a car, drive, get somewhere. So train has some nice advantages relative to air travel. The airplane doesn't typically deliver you right downtown, whereas trains typically do that. But sure, when you get your destination, maybe you're not going to go right downtown. You're going to need a car. Other train stations have solved this by having a car rental agency right there. Public transit certainly is another great solution. You know, we are so in some ways pampered in this society. We want everything, but we don't want to pay for it, or many of us, and I'm a cheapskate too. But, you know, sometimes we're going to have to make a little effort. We're going to have to reinvest in our transit systems. We're going to have to look to the private sector and to market to solve that problem with rental car agencies or these so-called zip cars where you go online, $35 fee, I guess it is, for annually, and then you can sign up and you can borrow a car when you get to your destination. You can drive it and leave it in a designated spot. You know, this is a great question Mark asks, which is this subsidy. Is this really what the taxpayers of Ohio want to do or should do? And that is the ultimate question. Do we want these advantages of a more energy-efficient way to travel? Do we want to also conserve our urban cores, our town centers, and redevelop them? Do we want these better connections to other cities in Ohio and the sports and the museums and those other amenities? And do we want to generate more commerce in our urban cores, mm-hmm. or you know, smarter okay. growth? I think these are excellent opportunities for Ohio. We can look to other states' experience and see all the benefits, all the return on investment other states are having, okay. and it is a good deal.
Mark, what do you think about that final mile issue?
Well, I think that is something that is really a flaw of the plan. You know, if you're talking about renting a car once you get there, then a lot of the so-called economic benefits of the train go away. The cost of renting a car, the cost of paying for gas once you get there, are going to certainly make this trip much more expensive than you would take. And I think Jack is right that we are a pampered society, and we want all the benefits, and we don't want to pay for it. And that's exactly the condemnation I make of this passenger rail. People want the benefits of passenger rail. They just don't want to pay the prices of it. I mean, he is right that we have to make this choice of whether we want these things or not. And according to the ridership projections, the people of Ohio, the choice they would make is no, because if they had to pay the full price of these tickets, if they had to pay not the 40% that they will pay, but the entire 100% cost that it would take to fund the system on a yearly basis, there's nobody who would ride those trains except a very few rich people. But the subsidized 60% of the cost, the yearly cost of running Amtrak, of running this passenger rail, would be subsidized by the taxpayers. And if we want a true indication of whether people really want passenger rail or not, remove the subsidies, let the riders pay the full cost of the price, and then we will truly see whether or not Ohioans want passenger rail or don't want passenger rail.
You know, that's a fair economic argument, I think, to ask. But if all of us had to pay the full freight, the full cost of a library or of a rail trail or these other amenities that we enjoy, we may not. We may decide, I don't think so. But when you amateurize that, you spread that over the population, 11 million people, and you get all the wonderful benefits, whether you ever walk into a library or not, or whether you've ever walked or ever will walk or ride on a rail trail, it is a benefit to the community. It is a benefit to society and its investments we've decided to make.
Well, a train isn't a benefit to the community, though. A train is the benefit to the rider, just like driving in a car is a benefit to the driver, and flying an airplane is a benefit to the passenger. I mean, the same logic can be applied to those. I mean, having an airport in a town is very important. Having roads in a town are very important, but those things, by and large, pay for themselves. Trains do not pay for themselves, and the taxpayers have to pay the lion's share, especially in this case, of those things. And so, you're comparing apples to oranges here. If you want to talk, let's talk about the transportation. Let's talk about making transportation pay for itself. And trains, of all the modes of transportation, do not do that.
Okay. Just real quick. That is a very good point. It would be interesting to see the apple to apple if we had to pay. Our gasoline tax doesn't pay for the highway patrol, doesn't pay for the airport security, doesn't pay for the emergency squad that responds on the highway. There are other costs that are not picked up by that fuel tax that we do subsidize, in fact, whether we drive or not.
And that'll be the same thing with train travel as it is with air travel. Hang on. Let's hear from Deb. She's talking about the Grand Trunk that runs a commuter line between Detroit and I can't read the rest. Deb, are you on there?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thanks for waiting.
You bet. Yeah. Well, it was some time ago. I first went to Michigan State University in 1968 through 71, and we had the Grand Trunk Western, which ran at least from Detroit. One branch went on to Chicago. One went on up through Canada. But they ran a stop, a special student train from Detroit to East Lansing and then Lansing. And a lot of the Michigan State University students took that. We had special student passes. It was a great alternative for parents giving us cars. And, it was not a high-speed train, but it was a great ride, and they took advantage of helping students get back and forth to college, and it was a win.
Of course, back then at Michigan State, they didn't allow until, I think, your junior year for you to have a car on campus, did they?
Good memory. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
What can I say?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling, Deb. Let's get to a few more callers. A couple folks have asked the same question that Ken wants to guess right now. Ken, you're on the air.
Yeah. I'm I don't want to downplay the idea of trains in Ohio. I love it. It's advanced stuff, technical stuff, but why not high-speed trains? It seems to me that if we were on the high-speed train situation, that we would be able to look at other jobs in other cities, maybe able to commute more easily throughout the state, go to school in different areas. It would seem to me that the most important part is that if we got there faster, it would be a better scenario and more advanced. Why can't we do that?
What about that, Mark? You bring it up that really these trains don't go fast enough to make it useful in that sense. What do you think about that? I mean, if it was high speed, would you have a feel differently?
Well, high speed rail, you really can't operate high speed rail on the train tracks that exist right now. You have to spend much more money to either refurbish tracks or build a whole separate system, because you can't have high speed rail operating with freight trains. It just doesn't really work very well. And so the high-speed rail plans in Ohio call for a huge amount of taxpayer money to be used to pay for it, which, you know, makes it even more uneconomical. I mean, the ridership numbers for high-speed rail, the ridership projections are you know, they're not very good either. They would certainly not pay for itself either. And so, you know, high-speed rail is even more of a boondoggle, because it is much more expensive to do this, and you're not going to get very many more riders than you would get with regular rail.
There's no question it would cost a lot more money. But Jack, I've seen actually it would increase ridership a lot. But you know, if you can't get there, what difference does it make, Jack?
Well, that is the holy grail to get this nation to a true high-speed rail system. But Ohio is following the proven path of other states of starting out with the conventional speed. You know, you got to walk before you can run. We have a rail system in Ohio. We can use that. We can provide benefits. It's going to take many, many more years to develop a true high-speed rail system. Why lose all the wonderful benefits waiting for the perfect? Let's go for the good now.
Omar, you're on the line.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I wanted to. I don't have a problem with a train system in Central Ohio or in Ohio. Really, what I have a problem is the idea of subsidizing something that's privately owned. It's unfair. I mean, like I said, I don't have a problem with the train myself, you know. But I think it's a good idea. But I don't want to be able to subsidize. This state is the fourth highest taxes in the state. In our United States to begin with. And if we start subsidizing things like that, it's a good idea, but it's definitely a bad idea.
Okay.
And
Omar,
it just also makes sense.
Make it quick, Omar. We're running out of time. I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Let me make a quick point.
I got to cut you off, Omar. Sorry about that, Omar. You have been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I've been talking with Jack Shaner of the Ohio Environmental Council and Mark Kilmer of the Buckeye Institute for Public Policy Solutions. We've had a nice talk about the 3Cs, the proposed 3C railway corridor through Ohio. I hope you both will join me again.
I'd love to.
Okay.
Thank you,
Ann. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.